Mr. Smith.
Here.
Mr. Dolny.
Here.
Mr. Jones.
Here.
Mr. Scully.
Here.
Mr. Davis.
Here.
Mr. Lenhartz.
Here.
Chairman, we have a quorum.
Mr. Tyner.
Thank you, sir. Clint Smith is our rep. Your representation. Remember how we went through what chapters to work on or land on the code? Clint's been attending some of the meetings with that card, so we've been quite a while. And Denise has an excellent presentation to give a lot of background on our floodplain regulations and our CRS program that we're in. If you look at the stories of Texas flooding and with all that rain and water, and we're very fortunate that we're a relatively young city and we're able to plan for natural disasters and try to limit flooding within our residential homes, and so far it's been great. We are part of the CRS program. We started it back in 2004, maybe even sooner, 2002. But Denise will give all those details. And the state has came up with another ordinance. We've already had, we have an existing ordinance in place in our land development code. The state wanted some changes to that, as information comes in, as people study the issues with flooding and floodplain. It is really an ordinance that they wanted us to adopt. Not a whole lot of changes, but really combined something that was needed, was combining the Florida Building Code and that aspect, not just the planning aspect, but all the other requirements of Florida Building Code, and kind of mirroring the planning and the adult environment kind of together to make improvements to the program. So Denise, we have wanted to workshop this with you. We're going back to FCAR. The state looked at our draft. We'll go back to FCAR and hopefully back to y'all after we meet with them. But with that, Denise has a presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Tyner. Denise Bevan, my title is City Administration Coordinator. I take the role as floodplain administrator. And so tonight's ordinance presentation is to kind of give you some background on what we do for floodplain management here in the city. You've heard Mr. Tyner talk about the CRS program. We're going to talk a lot about what that means. And so it's going to be a little educational. We're going to talk about how do we regulate floodplain and what does that mean. And then we're going to talk about some highlights from the ordinance that we think are meaningful to the development community, and also echo some of the modifications to really merge regulations in the Florida Building Code with our local regulations, and that includes higher standards because of our commitment to the CRS program. I'll tell you more about that. So, as Mr. Tyner said, a bulk of the ordinance that's in the Land Development Code today, it's a mirror image of what you're seeing tonight. But there are some things that we want to bring to your attention and get back as we move forward. As Mr. Tyner stated, we work very closely with the state. That's the Florida Division of Emergency Management on the state model ordinance is what it's called. And the objective of the state model ordinance is to bring in the Florida Building Code. Over the last few years, it's brought in more floodplain regulations to the building structure and trying to make sure all of that talks to each other. That's the objective of the ordinance. So just to get started, here's an overview. Mr. Tyner stated about how long we've been involved in this program. And the first thing we want to talk about is the National Flood Insurance Program. That program is very important because without participation in that program through FEMA, our citizens can't buy flood insurance. It's pretty clear. You have to have minimal standards of flood regulations administered through FEMA. And dually, if you do not participate as a community in the National Flood Insurance Program, you do not get federal disaster assistance. So those are two very heavy-handed consequences of not participating. Hawaii has minimal standards. A lot of communities take it a step up, depending on what you're dealing with. Maybe you're in Texas, maybe you're in, of course, here in Florida or Hawaii. There's different things that happen in your community. The community rating system, CRS, as Mr. Tynes stated, that's a voluntary program for communities. It's also administered through FEMA. And basically, the structure and the intent of the CRS program is that as you do more as a community, you're managing your stormwater appropriately, you're doing outreach to your citizens, you're definitely applying regulations and keeping records, and you're reporting back to FEMA, all these things that basically you get credit for. And you have to go through a report card kind of process, and you say, okay, we do this, this, and this, and this, and you get points. And those points accumulate to reflect class designations. That's the term, class designation. And as you do more, your class goes up, scale 1 to 10. 1's perfect, 10's entry level. And as that class goes up towards 1, your citizens actually realize discounts on their flood insurance. And just to give you a timeline of how the City of Palm Coast has approached floodplain management, we'll start with a reference of being accepted into the National Flood Insurance Program in 2002. So that, of course, enabled our citizens to get flood insurance. As we moved through the ranks of floodplain management, we entered into the CRS program at a Class 7, which is very good. So we were already doing some really robust things. And that created a 15% reduction. And that was in 2004. If you haven't heard, we are getting new flood insurance rate maps, but our current effective maps administered through FEMA, and we'll talk a little bit about what those maps do, we had those adopted in 2006. Unified Land Development Code 2008, that's a reference that Mr. Tyner stated of our current regulations. And just to quickly go through the rest, Class 6 in 2009, Class 5 in 2014, we referenced an existing meeting that we had with FCAR, that was in April 2017. We're really proud of our most recent achievement with the CRS program, that was just last year, and we reached a Class 4. And at the time, yes sir?
Is that flood insurance right now, the effective one now, available on the city website?
It went on the city website yesterday. Oh. Those maps will become effective June 6, 2018.
Okay, but it's already on the website?
It is on the website. Okay. You can look that up. And meeting with Ed Carver, I touched on the Class 4. When we made that achievement to Class 4, at the time that we were provided the actual determination from FEMA, there's only 12 other communities in the whole United States that actually have a Class 4 or better. So we're really proud of that, a lot of work. And that is a realized benefit to flood insurance premium policyholders that are in certain flood zones, and we'll talk more about that, get an actual 30% reduction off their premiums, which is really hits the bottom line for our citizens. Mr. Tyner mentioned the Florida Building Code. The most recent 6th edition became effective on New Year's Eve, December 31st. And there's a host of floodplain regulations for buildings in that most recent edition adoption, or I should say just effective. That another reason why this ordinance is to have those references to the Florida Building Code, so when they sunset every 3 years, we're not having to come back and deal with new regulations. It's a simple reference in the ordinance now. And as we've already touched on, the new maps will become effective June 6th of 2018, and we've woven in that new effective date into the ordinance as well. So just to go through these bullets, this ordinance helps us remain consistent with the NFIP standards. And it coordinates very nicely with the Florida Building Code. Florida Division of Emergency Management, huge partner in this. They developed the state model ordinance many years ago and it progressively went through every community in the NFIP in the state of Florida, helping them work through their ordinances, look at higher standards, making sure that this ordinance for other communities and ours really exactly talks to the federal regulations. one of the things that we're working with the FEM consultants is that they were very clear to be cautious of any kind of terminology changing, because they've actually had communities change one word and it totally undermines federal regulations. And it's a very precise process that has been very helpful with them being our partners. And again, we're just trying to merge all these regulations into an effective ordinance while keeping our higher standards. But we also want to bring some information to the board's attention on where we're clarifying the ordinance, where we feel that there's gaps or disconnects with our existing ordinance, where we're clarifying that. But we also do have some new aspects that are new to the ordinance that we want to make sure is clearly detailed to the board and then ultimately to our city council and our stakeholders. So when we talk about flood zones and we talk about flood insurance rate maps, and that's ultimately when you start hearing about people, am I at high risk and what is my flood insurance premium going to be and what is changing? For the city of Palm Coast, we're really talking about special flood hazard areas, which are your regulatory floodplains. And so you have A zones, which are more inland, and then AE zones that have been studied because they're associated with coastal risk. And that's what FEMA is really focused on for the East Coast, obviously, is that threat from hurricanes and surges associated with coastal hazards. So your A zones are normally inland, and your AE zones have been studied. And again, those are regulatory floodplains. For the city of Palm Coast and most communities, we have what's called floodways. And to make it very simple, it's like your creeks, your natural areas that convey water constantly. So if you don't want to dam up those features and some of the regulations specified floodways. And then you also have man-made features that are deemed floodways by just being a standard of, as we experienced with Irma, you would have that surge come in and you would get basically that influence from the intracoastal that would come through our system. And so you do have floodways that aren't natural as well. The areas that everybody wants to be in by flood insurance purposes are X zones.
X is good, A is bad.
Perfect. And X zones are viewed by flood insurance purposes, not by Mother Nature purposes, as lower risk. So those are your higher areas. Model says that the water won't go uphill here. Things of that nature. Now, are these only flood zones in the state of Florida? No. And you'll notice in the ordinance, you'll see B zones, AO zones, AH zones, all these other zones that exist. And we want to make sure that if any floodplains change, that we're ready to deal with any zone that could be administered by FEMA. But for the city of Palm Coast, these are the zones we're talking about. So I thought a graphic, a figure would actually be helpful. And this is actually a sample from the maps that will be effective June 6th. And just to give you some orientation, I picked an area in the saltwater canals, pretty much. We all know where the saltwater canals are. But what I'd like to show is basically through here, that's a very nice cross section of a floodway, a X zone, an X shaded zone, and also a regular just AE zone. So I zoomed in to this area, so you're seeing a zoom in on the right, and these are a legend from the actual flood panel, and this is basically shows by hatching what zone you're in. And the area that I circled is really at the juncture of Channel Side, which used to be called the Yacht Club, and that's Big Mulberry Branch is the floodway. College Waterway is basically there on the saltwater canals, and then we have Long Creek Nature Reserve that's just to the east of that, which is right here. So I thought it would be helpful to the board to actually see what the flood insurance rate maps look like. In our opinion, staff's been following this since 2011. FEMA's gotten very good about having higher resolution data for on the ground and their modeling efforts. We're seeing some positive changes with the maps, but also we're seeing changes as well that do change in designation from what was not a special flood hazard area, but now is. So I just want to pause on this just for a minute. Does anyone have any questions about what a flood insurance rate map depicts? It does have a bearing on the upcoming slides, so I wanted to have an opportunity for the board to ask any questions about rate maps. Okay, so something new to the ordinance. What's been incorporated that is not in the current ordinance, associated floodways, specific to natural floodways, is what we're calling a 25-foot floodway setback. That's only on natural systems. And so the purpose is to minimize encroachments to protect floodplain storage and natural function. As we were just talking about, we have natural floodways and then we have the man-made canal floodways. And what we're talking about here is trying to minimize encroachment on behalf of development with those very dynamic systems. So, yes, sir.
Would you go back to the last slide about what we're talking about floodways? That floodway that shows running, I guess it's running east down to that canal. Isn't the yacht club building right in the middle of it?
No, it's just to the left, just to the bottom of it.
It's right behind the Portuguese club and the other.
If you go down that way, that's where that little waterfall is.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No, but it's an excellent point, if I wouldn't mind hijacking your comment.
Not
at all. Is that you have FEMA floodway data. It's very good. It's been studied by cross-section. It serves a purpose of understanding if development did go into the fringe of a floodway, what would it do to the capacity of conveyance? And the last time FEMA came to town and looked at our maps with the effective maps, that means not the 2018 maps, but the ones before that was in the early 2000s, and they didn't take effect until 2006. Same thing with our current maps. The last time FEMA really started to get into the process, it started in 2011. So you have a lag time a lot with these studies. And even the existing hurricanes, we were concerned. We said, FEMA, you know, just got hit by Matthew and Irma. What do you think about that? Do you need to go back to the study and look at it more? Because these are new systems. And they said, no, the model actually dealt with that. But we're seeing things in these systems where they're changing. You have conveyance of water, you get shoaling, you get vegetation changing and adapting. So it's a living thing that moves and changes from time to time. And FEMA isn't going to be on their ground all that time to be able to adapt. And so when you see that spaghetti line, that may not be exactly where the floodway is in real time. And that's really from the practicality of having this setback. So we don't have a home built basically so close to the floodway and it shifts and it undermines the home.
Yeah. Good point.
And so by referencing the ordinance, section 10207C, the encroachment into the floodway or the setback, and what does an encroachment mean? It means development. So development could be grading, it could be a structure, it could be anything that may affect the capacity of that system. And so if you encroach into a setback, all it says is that additional analysis is needed to demonstrate that you're not going to affect that system, where you're not going to basically change it to a point where the elevation of the water is going to change somewhere in the conveyance. And if you do have that, our responsibility as a community to FEMA is that any analysis that we get, any type of high-level local information, FEMA wants that. That helps them make future decisions. So that's where the letter of map revision comes in. That's a term that FEMA uses to say, okay, things on the ground has changed, so we need to take that data, recognize it, and then put it as somewhat of a bookmark for future maps to respect that change. because they will not print a map a day every time a letter or map changes. So that's by reference what this new addition to the code would do. And one of the things we want to make sure we were clear on is, where are these floodways? In our current boundaries, we have two natural systems that marry with our stormwater system that are floodways and will be affected by this addition. So here we have what we were just looking at. That's a Big Mulberry Branch system by the Yacht Club. And the other is Beulah Creek tributary. And I just want to take a moment to zoom in to those areas. We had our GIS staff professionals actually look at, okay, how many properties actually come in connection to that 25-foot setback. It's a little tough to see here, but you see the same definition of the squiggly line that represents a floodway. And there's a very faint line on the edges of that floodway that actually represents a setback. And so the blue hatching on the left is actually what we own as the City of Palm Coast. We've done a great job of trying to acquire lands that affect and are married to our stormwater system, but also trying to remove properties out at high risk. And I have a treat, actually, for the board, quick snapshot of our LIDAR data. And LIDAR is basically where a plane goes over, it shoots laser pulses at the ground, and you get survey quality data. And we're in the process of actually doing a quality analysis to make sure the data is good. But I wanted to show basically how different a floodway from FEMA, which is a very nice contoured skinny line, to what a real system looks like on the ground. And so the blue is basically the lowest part. And I know that this is for presentation purposes, so you may not see the resolution, but there's fine lines within the blue that represents where water goes. And then you have the green, which is the highest elevation. So you'll see the lines of rows and things of that nature. Looking at which properties come closest to being affected with a setback, we actually have only four single-family lots. Two of those are improved, and two are actually still vacant. You can see how different the floodway thin line is versus where the blue actually falls. So it's not only that we're making this regulation because of how concerned we are about the floodway and how it marries into our system, but we really worry about the properties affected long term. And we have better data than FEMA, so we will be looking at these on an ongoing basis and actually lays the groundwork for probably acquiring additional lands that could be at high risk and important to our stormwater system. So that's Big Mulberry Branch. And this is Beulah. The system is actually completely comprised in the Old Kings Road South DRI, Development of Regional Impact. And so we've actually worked very proactively with the applicant over many, many years to make sure that there was plenty of open space next to the floodway. And so the two systems that we're really talking about are Big Mulberry and Beulah, the one that you see here. So that's what's completely new to the ordinance. Now to get to where we're clarifying on development standards. And within the ordinance, you see a lot of things about responsibility, the floodplain administrator, the land use administrator reporting and talking to FEMA and all of that, record retention. But I thought it would be nice just to, again, pluck out these development standards that I think is most meaningful to the development community. And let's just start with site plans and construction. So establish base flood elevation. So what a base flood elevation is the actual, the elevation that would be the point where your regulatory standards would start applying. And that BFE is done by FEMA to reflect your 1% annual chance flood. So if you're building your house and the BFE is a 7. That means that could be the 1% annual chance. That's where the water is going to get to. And FEMA says you need to build above that. And for the city of Palm Coast, that's 1 foot above BFE. That's our regulation. And actually, that is now consistent with the Florida Building Code. It used to be a higher standard. Now it actually meets the Florida Building Code. So we're not going above and beyond in that standard. So for site plans and construction, a BFE would be established based on scale of project. The reason I say scale of project is there's a defining line of density, 5 acres or 50 lots or more. You have to actually do an engineering analysis. If you look into our code as proposed, if you're below that threshold, you do have the opportunity of just building 2 feet above BFE. So those are things that were always lost in translation when we talked to the development community. It was disconnected. Now everything's classified according to site plan, according to subdivision, according to critical facilities, so they're nicely delineated and they're not cross-referencing too many sections to confuse any applicant that could come in the door. And as we mentioned, there's an additional analysis. We're very protective of floodways, the riverine systems. If we were in St. John's County or some of those areas, we're dealing with the St. John's River. That's a riverine system. That's a totally different type of monster that we would have and we do not have here. But the National Flood Insurance Program wants to have those standards in there to make sure that you're meeting federal regulations. For site improvements, utilities, and limitations, this is basically the catch-all section. So if you're doing anything within the special flood hazard area, you have to demonstrate that you're meeting compensatory storage. And that's a term that just means if you're taking this much capacity out of the special flood hazard area, those A and AE zones, you're demonstrating that you're not affecting the overall system. So you're providing storage. It's not typically a cup for cup, but sometimes, depending on the system, it could be. And hopefully that's clear. Subdivisions and plats, this has been an area that we've heard a lot of frustration from the development side because it's a lot of areas that are more inland that haven't been studied. We do not want to put new residents and new subdivisions in high-risk zones. And the existing ordinance spoke to that merit, but there was a disconnect. So as referenced in 10.02.12, an BFE will be established. You're going to be in compliance with the compensatory storage. And that data will ultimately be transmitted to FEMA. And prior to final plat approval, letter of map change will be determined by FEMA. What does that mean? If you're developing in a special flood hazard area, those A and AE zones, that ultimately those residents, those lots will actually be removed out of the zone because you're adding fill, you're demonstrating by studies, you're doing elevation certificates which prove the residents are out of the special flood hazard area, so ultimately they don't get affected by flood insurance premium mandates, and they're also out of risk. We're protecting their structures and their investment. Another area is critical facilities. Critical facilities are basically your EOCs, your hospitals, your schools, your shelters, your fire stations, your police stations, your nursing homes, all those facilities that you just do not want in a high-risk area. So we brought additional definition clarification based on Florida Building Code. New critical facilities shall be directed away from special flood hazard areas, those high-risk areas. And in the event that a new critical facility is proposed because there's just no option in a special flood hazard area, a letter of map change determination will be required to remove the entire project out of that high-risk area. And with that, those were the areas of the proposed ordinance we wanted to bring and highlight to the board. Our next steps, as Mr. Tyner noted, our second meeting is scheduled January 25th with FCARD. The comments that we received tonight And also from the stakeholders on the 25th, we'll consolidate those comments. We'll talk to FDEM, again, our state partner, talk about, you know, what that means and is it effective to amend the ordinance. Right now, it's a very strong ordinance, very sound from any review by FDEM. And one of the things that FDEM has done is become kind of the face of FEMA with these ordinances. So if they say it's okay, it doesn't have to go to FEMA and get okay. But any comments, we would bring back to FDEM and have them consider. And then we'll come back to PLDRB February 21st. Our ultimate goal is to get in front of City Council in April and definitely get in front of them for a first and second reading before the maps become effective. And that's really, again, just so it's noted, June 6th is when the new flood insurance rate maps will take effect. And any questions or thoughts about anything you heard tonight or other questions?
I don't have to do public hearing, right?
That's workshop.
Yes. Questions from the board. So we'll start. Jake?
Yeah, I just said back to my question. The theme of the maps, do they take into consideration the amount of impervious, in the area they're mapping? That's obviously constantly changing as we develop and grow.
Right. For our community, it starts with what happens way off in the ocean. And then it comes in, I'll get to your question. It starts with other storms that are in history and trying to understand what would happen, you know, to the beach and to the dunes and where would the water go, how would it react into the intercoastal, work through the channels of our saltwater canals, and ultimately where would it end up. So they look at elevation data. So they're looking at survey data. They're not looking at, per se, impervious surface as much. But it's really about how that surge would come in and how it would behave and how would it work through the low-lying areas and ultimately where would it come to that BFE magic elevation that they say you have to be above it or 1 foot above in our case for the city of Palm Coast. So impervious surface, it's a factor, but I would say it's at the core of the modeling effort.
No, I don't really have. I guess I'm going to ask one small question, and that's, all right, like these past storms, I've only been here a few years, but this past storm, it opened up that second inlet, and they keep closing it off. Does that have to do with a lot of this?
It doesn't, per se. What can happen for a community is if we have an area and we saw devastating flooding, and we saw concerns on a local level that we said, hey, we need to do something here with regulations. We can't allow dunes to be encroached upon. This is a very sensitive area. Then a community has the right, if they have the ability from a study and knowledge that can be proven to FEMA to be reputable, we can create areas that are regulatory in nature. We can create our own high-risk areas. So with FEMA's perspective, they actually, in their model, told us how would a dune be undermined. So you have dunes today, but what if that water went over the dunes and eroded the dunes, what would that look like? So our understanding is they took those scenarios in mind with how the water would behave, even in the city of Palm Coast, with those new openings, and but any repair of that would be more on a regulatory nature.
And you can also see, I think it's kind of a good example of how, you know, the local regulations have improved, how it continues to improve on the data and the analysis. Like the last storm that we had on the beach side, you had the houses that were 40, 45 years old. A lot of those flooded. And then the newer houses where the regulations are that, you know, you have to get out of that floodway and be a foot above that base flood elevation. Those houses didn't. You know, the older ones did, the newer ones do. So it's, I guess that's kind of an example of updating and continuing to improve of the knowledge that we have and where we flood. kind of correlates with all this too.
Does the surrounding municipalities, whether unincorporated county or does their participation or lack thereof in the Fund Church program and the CRS program have any impact on our rating, the CRS rating?
Actually, very good question, and it does in a positive way because we have a group of certified floodplain managers we coordinate on a regular basis, and we work closely with Flagler County Unincorporated and their emergency management staff that oversees a local mitigation strategy, and that's a plan for the whole county that includes all parties, the school system, the hospital. We're all part of that process of looking to mitigate for hazards. And because of their efforts at the county and updating the local mitigation strategy just in time for our most recent CRS review, we were able to get to that class 4, and that's because of the county. I can say that comfortably and actually very proudly that we have that coordination. So yes, it does make a difference.
Great.
Yes, sir? No questions.
None.
I don't either. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We have no action on this.
No, we just would take if y'all had any questions and
there's nothing further. Let's take a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Okay. All in favor?